kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing?
I hate everybody and everything, and somebody's going to get cut. Next.
Sweet.
It's been a rough week.
It's been a rough week for everyone.
Yeah. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm better than I was last episode.
Yeah? Are you going to cut a bitch, too?
I've been thinking about it, but I'd rather just, you know...
It's a lot of energy to exert. It has to be really worth it.
I know. I'm so lazy, and I would love to cut people. Cut bitches is fun, but that requires work and effort. And I just don't have, you know, the wherewithal to really want to cut someone right now.
Yeah? Oh, I do.
I'll just give you a list of names then.
I took steroids, and I'm in a bad mood. So that's just, like, somebody's getting sliced.
Hopefully it's not me.
Next.
Fingers crossed. I'm guessing you just want to dive into this one today?
Fuck it, let's go.
Cool. News of the week. A lot of news happened this week. There was a Nintendo Direct. Did you watch this?
I did. I watched as much of it as I could. Like, I had it playing in the background, so I know what happened, and I have a basic understanding of what to expect. Although, because I don't play Nintendo much, I was still just like, I don't know why this is a big deal.
Fair.
So, there are a couple things I understand as a big deal just because of their prevalence in pop culture, more than anything.
Like, they led off with Super Mario Maker 2 is coming to the Nintendo Switch this June.
I can see why that one's a big deal.
Yeah, that was kind of an out-of-nowhere thing.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I don't... As far as I was aware, it wasn't on anybody's radar as a thing that was going to happen.
Oh, there were a couple things on this Direct that no one kind of saw coming.
Like what?
Like the last thing that happened on the show, but we'll get there.
Ah, gotta take
we'll
a
get
slow.
To that
okay.
one. We got to lead with the tease and hope people stick around.
Yeah.
They had a new trailer for Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3. It's coming out this summer, and we'll have online play, so that's pretty cool. They mentioned that it's launching exclusively on the Switch, and the wording makes me think that it might be a timed exclusive instead of a permanent exclusive, but
yeah.
I guess we'll see.
I know when they originally announced it, wasn't there some, like, it was supposed to be just straight exclusive, but now it may not be.
Yeah. No one knows for sure. We'll find out. In due time, I'm sure.
I would be really surprised if they limit it wholeheartedly to the Switch, given that it's been on everything up until now. I have one of the Ultimate Alliance games.
I think the big thing is that it's published by Nintendo.
Is it?
I believe so. Which, if that's the case, we're not going to see it anywhere else. But just their wording, how they said it, launching exclusively on the Switch, it makes you wonder.
Yeah. That's the thing with these kind of the directs and the press conferences and things for releases like this. Wording is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was going to be, you know, only available on the Nintendo Switch, that would be a whole different story than saying, oh, it's console launch for us first.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely a reason to have your interest piqued. Because that's definitely a word choice that stands out.
Yeah, but still, I think it might be stuck only on Nintendo, but we'll see. That's the only thing we could do is sit and wait and see, and I'm going to pick it up on the Switch either way. So
that's because you like anything on your Switch.
I do, and there's a lot of good stuff on the Switch coming.
On the Switch, and then you're happy. I'm
like,
actually kind of excited about one of the things coming for the Switch. I don't have a Switch, but I'm pretty sure that just because it's being made and announced on a Switch doesn't mean it's going to be a Switch exclusive.
I guess we'll find out when we get to it on the list.
Yeah. You figured out what it is already. Go ahead.
Not really. I'm looking through and I'm trying to see what has your interest, but I guess I don't know. I'm kind of blanking this week, so
okay.
I feel like you.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. they announced Box Boy is returning. Really cool series of puzzle games now featuring two-player content, Box Boy and Box Girl. 270 yeah. stages coming out April 26th on the Switch. That one looks really good. I love the Box Boy series, so it's good to see more of it.
That was one I saw, and I was like, I don't understand why this is a thing. Because it was clearly I had missed a previous fan favorite somehow, because I don't play Nintendo.
Yeah, I think there's three games out already, three Box Boy games.
Really?
They have an amiibo for it in Japan.
How do they make that many games but still have another 270-some-odd levels they can make?
Magic.
Magic. Insanity.
They announced that the Smash Brothers 3.0 update is coming in the spring, and then that's all they said about it, really. They were like, hey, an update's coming. Do you want to know more about it? Tough shit, motherfuckers. We're not telling you anything.
3.0?
Yes.
Like, didn't it just come out in December? How are they already up to 3?
Yeah, because they're updating it quickly, I guess.
That is insane.
Yeah, 2.0 came out a couple of weeks ago. I think 2.0 was the update with the piranha plant.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
We're somewhere around the 2.0 mark was piranha plant. So 3.0 is coming in the spring. Joker from Persona 5 is releasing in April, and they announced more amiibo will be coming through the year, including Snake, which is pretty cool to see.
Really? Snake?
Yeah.
Wow.
What?
I don't know. I was a little shocked by that one.
Why?
I don't know. It was just when you said it, it took me a second. It kind of hit me odd, and I was like, what?
I mean, he's in the game.
I didn't know he was in the game.
Yeah, Snake from Metal Gear Solid.
It just seemed like Solid such Snake. An odd... I mean, at this point, they have the fucking piranha plant. Anything's possible.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't be surprised by any of it, but I don't know, something about you saying Snake, and I'm like, what? It just hit weird.
Yeah. The Smash Brothers lineup is no joke. That's really what happens when you cram like 80 characters in a game. So, good stuff there. Captain Toad Treasure Tracker is getting a new free update to include two-player co-op support, and that happened... today or yesterday, as we're recording.
There's always got to be one of those surprise bitches. There it is.
Yeah, that was one of many, in fact.
Yeah.
They also announced the paid DLC is coming with 18 new challenges available March 14th, and you could pre-order and get an early course available today.
Yeah.
Yay. I like Captain Toad, so seeing more content for Captain Toad is good.
It looks charming.
It is. It's adorable. Bloodstained Ritual of the Night is hitting the Switch in summer 2019. Dragon Quest Builders 2 is hitting July 12th. Is that the one you're excited about?
No.
No?
No. Keep going.
I'll keep going. Dragon Quest XI Definitive Edition S is hitting the Switch this fall. It's going to include new content and new stories. It's also going to include fully orchestrated field and battle themes. One of the biggest complaints people have had with the game is the soundtrack, because it is fucking terrible. So to see that they're going to have orchestrated tracks, or at least more orchestrated music, makes me very happy. I just don't know how much of the soundtrack is comprised of field and battle themes. Like, I don't know if field means just the world map, or if it means like towns and caves and everything else.
Yeah. That's a good question.
I hope it's everything, but I'm kind of worried it's not going to be everything, because the non-orchestral soundtrack in Dragon Quest XI is... Oh my god, it is awful. That's my only complaint with that game, is that soundtrack is just... ugh.
Yeah, I've never played it.
Let's see, what else? Disney Tsum Tsum Festival is coming out in 2019. I have no clue what the fuck a Tsum Tsum is. Do you?
Yes, okay, because I have kids.
Yes, I don't.
But so. A Tsum Tsum is basically just like little Disney characters that have been chippied down into little pill shapes. And they're super cute, and that's basically their whole bread and butter. It's just Disney characters chippied up to be even cuter.
Well, Bandai Namco is working on it, and it's going to have online play.
I hope that this isn't just Nintendo only.
Is this the one that you were excited about?
I mean, I am excited about this, but this was not the one I was originally speaking of.
It's not the one.
The one. Yeah. But I would play this. if I if it comes to other consoles, because I can't afford to just buy a Nintendo Switch to play a Tsum Tsum game, but they're adorable, and I'd like it.
Well, you could play Ultimate Alliance 3 as well if you pick up a Switch.
I haven't played Ultimate Alliance 2, and it's on my Xbox.
They announced new content is coming for Starlink Battle for Atlas, with new Star Fox content coming in the spring update in April. I'm kind of surprised to see them still supporting the game. It seems pretty dead on arrival.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shock to see.
Yeah, like this week, the week that we're recording, the episode's going to come out on Saturday, so it's probably going to be too late for most people. But it is, the starter kit for Xbox One is $20 at Best Buy.
Really?
Yes. Instead of 75, it's 20.
And yet they're still supporting it.
Yeah. The Switch version is 30.
Wow. But kudos to them.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised that they're supporting it, but I guess the content's been in the works and it's easier to just release it than scrap it completely.
Yeah. Because then you got to take a loss on that shit.
Yeah. Nintendo might be footing the bill as well to produce the content since it's Star Fox.
Could be.
But yeah, good news for people who like Starlink. And yeah. I might end up picking up the starter kit for $20 tomorrow when I go to Best Buy.
I mean, at that price, why not?
For $20, I mean, fuck it, right?
Fuck it, why not?
I just got a Twitch payout. I'll use some of it for Starlink.
Then you have to stream it and be like, this is what your bits paid for, bitches.
Oh, yeah. Good news. Yay. Rune Factory 4 Special Edition is hitting the Switch later this year, so Rune Factory fans have more to look forward to. And they also confirmed that Rune Factory 5 is in development for the Switch, so that is nifty.
Okay.
Onanaki from Square Enix was announced for the Switch in summer 2019. It was later confirmed it's also hitting Steam and PS4. Xbox left out again. So thanks, Square Enix. Square Enix
is on a fucking roll with pissing off Xbox. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, I don't know either. But hey, apparently Kingdom Hearts 3 is the top seller on Xbox right now.
That's so weird, too, because when Square Enix does release something on Xbox, it gets gobbled the fuck up.
I know. Everybody people want RPGs.
And yet they just shrug and go, nah, it's cool. Y'all, you don't want this.
Hey, maybe it'll come later. You never know. Yoshi's Crafted World is releasing March 29th, and they had a free demo out today.
Hey, that looked adorable.
It does. I love Yoshi.
Yeah, Yoshi's the best.
Fire Emblem Three Houses video. It was supposed to come out in the spring, but they announced it's releasing July 26th. They said that, you know, it's better to delay it and have a better game than to release it early. And
that is a good point.
A special edition is going to be available, which caught my eye because there's a steelbook.
Oh boy.
Also comes with a sound selection disc, an art book, and a 2020 calendar. But the steelbook is gorgeous, and it is up on Amazon right now, and I have a pre-order in, and I'm excited because it didn't sell out.
Wasted no time.
Hey, Nintendo Collector Editions, they sell out quick, so yeah. I wasn't about to fuck around and wait.
Damn.
Then they announced what was possibly one of the biggest things for me, a game called Tetris 99.
What is this?
It is 99 player Tetris Online. So Tetris Battle Royale, pretty much.
It is so fucking ridiculous.
It is so fucking good, too.
I was expecting that. I was.
It's even better. It is a free to download game for Nintendo Switch Online members. So the people who complain that you're $20 a year, your piddly $20 a year isn't getting you enough content. Here you go, a free game. And now this is the point where people complain, oh, it's not really a free game because you're paying a subscription cost.
Yep, there's always somebody. I would have played it if it was on Xbox.
Well, if you get a Switch.
I don't have a Switch. Look, you're just saying if you get a Switch, then that way you can be like, review this on Switch. And I'd be like, God damn it, okay.
I don't know. Chris and Purnell might get mad that that someone else is creeping on their Switch territory.
Let them. Bring it on, pork chop.
Best part about Tetris 99, it's available today.
Yay!
My first game, I got fourth place.
I watched the videos of it and I just laughed.
It is so cool.
I'd play it though. I really would. I'm not going to lie.
It's so cool because they have 49 players on each side of your grid and you can see how they're doing if you pay attention.
Yeah.
And just to have it like in real time, you'll see people getting knocked out of the game and their grid disappearing and it pops up like 50 players remaining, 20 players remaining. It is so cool that it's like 10 players remaining and things are getting quicker and more fast paced and the music's picking up and it is awesome. 99 player Tetris. That shit is legit. It is awesome.
Now I'm curious what it says when you get first though, like all the other Battle Royale games, you know, winner, winner, chicken dinner, victory, oh, Royale. You are the champion. So what does it say for Tetris when you win?
I don't know. I haven't gotten a win yet. I've gotten fourth. I've gotten fifth. I've gotten 72nd.
Well, now that's your homework for the weekend is to play Tetris BR and let me know.
And hopefully I could get a win.
Yeah. Let me know what the winner announcement is.
Yeah. Dead by Daylight of all games is coming to the Switch this fall. I'll be honest, it looked like shit.
It did. It looked so bad. I like Dead by Daylight. This is one of those where, like, I'm constantly wishing I had more people to play it with me. I'll be scrolling through my Reddit install and I'll see it and I'll be like, God damn it. Nobody wants to play it with me. Nobody has it. But
I'd be up for trying it. I've never played it before, but I'd be willing to give it a go.
I will say, I think one of the things I like about it best is that if you're playing solo, you can play as the monster. If you're playing in a group, you have to play Survivor, though. Mm. And that forces people to be there as Survivor so that the people who are playing as the monsters get a game. With a lot of those asymmetrical multiplayer games, you have people who always want to be the monster because they're seemingly kind of overpowered. And they just want to go it alone and just fuck up everybody else's game. But it, by saying, okay, you're in a group, you're pushed into that, into the Survivor scenario. If you can run into people who are two or three deep and have a group already, you know you're going to be able to find a game as the monster when you are alone.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. Maybe one day I'll try it with you.
That would be good.
After that, they announced Deltarune Chapter 1. It is a new game from Toby Fox, the creator of Undertale. It looks to be in the same universe. It is releasing for free on February 28th. More chapters are in development that will not be free.
Wow.
So it's cool to see an episodic RPG, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll see how that works out, but it's cool for Undertale fans getting more content. What else? Demon X Machina Prototype Missions demo is available today for a limited time. The full game's coming in the summer. This is another one I don't think looked very good. I think it looked kind of rough. People who played the Prototype Missions demo said it played kind of rough. The visuals were kind of rough. There were graphical glitches. So I haven't played the demo of this one yet, but we'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm not too sold on this one yet.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with any of that one.
Yeah. Oh, well.
You're on your own there. I can't back you up there. Sorry, I'm useless. Next.
Then they announced that just a whole bunch of games that are coming to the Switch. Grid Auto Sport is coming to the Switch this summer. This one was surprising. Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice is hitting this spring.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see that hit in the Switch.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, especially given how bad Dead by Daylight looks. I was like, what are they going to be able to do with a game that looks like Hellblade?
Hellblade, it looked good from the footage they showed.
It did. I mean, they have the ability to show the better parts.
Yeah.
But I am curious what it will look like full-fledged on the Switch, especially in handheld mode, because isn't it like it's limited to 720, isn't it?
Well, it depends on the game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it depends on what the developer could pump out. Because it's a smaller screen, they usually go for a lower resolution.
Yeah.
Just because it's not as powerful in handheld mode as it is docked.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting situation to see. I'm glad that more people get to play it. Put money in Ninja Theory's pockets.
Yes.
But because they sure deserve it. Have you seen if they're going to do anything for the Nintendo release like they did with Xbox, where they donate to mental health awareness?
I haven't seen anything.
I didn't think to look, but I would not be surprised if they do. Ninja Theory, we're going to Google them real quick. Let's check their Twitter and see if they said anything, because that's something worth pointing out. If they,
it might be too early for that anyway, just because it was just announced. So maybe closer to release, they'll be like, hey, we're going to do this thing with mental health awareness again.
Well, they announced
which would be cool.
Nintendo UK announced it yesterday. But yeah, anyway, either way, that's usually what they tend to do on release. And I would hope that they do it again.
Yeah, we'll
see.
That's
fantastic.
Either way, it's cool the game's hitting the Switch.
Yes.
Mortal Kombat 11 is hitting the Switch, so that's cool to see. Switch gamers are going to get to rip the shit out of each other April 23rd. Unravel 2 is hitting the Switch March 22nd. Assassin's Creed 3 Remastered is hitting the Switch May 21st.
Ding, 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 ding.
Is that the one?
I know that Assassin's Creed 3 gets a lot of flack, and I just made noise. It may not be the best of the Assassin's Creed stories. I think Connor was an amazing character, but here's what I'm looking forward to. There was a little-known addition to Assassin's Creed 3 called Assassin's Creed Liberation. And Assassin's Creed Liberation is the story of Aveline de Grandpre. I think I'm pronouncing that the best my redneck voice can. but she's an incredible character. Absolutely fantastic. She has different personas that she takes on to blend into the world where she can be an assassin, obviously, but she can also become just the lady, which is an aristocrat, but she can also take on the role of a slave.
Hmm.
And she's a black female character in the Assassin's Creed universe, and it's a shame she never got her own full-fledged game, because her story does tie into Connor's. Although I thought it was interesting that originally she was written to be a love interest for Connor, and then they dropped it. They just let her be herself. And fleshed out, and Liberation is what we got. Liberation was originally only for the Vita.
Yeah.
And then it got remastered and brought to the 360. It wasn't remastered, it was just HD.
Yeah.
So I got pumped up. So this is absolutely one of my favorite entries into Assassin's Creed, though, is Aveline's story. And if it gets even 5 more people to play as Aveline, worth it.
Well, that and 3, they're hitting all the platforms. They're part of the Assassin's Creed Odyssey Gold Edition with the Season Pass.
Yeah.
So definitely getting that one on Xbox.
Yeah. I did buy Odyssey recently, but I didn't get the Season Pass. But knowing that that's coming, I'm inclined to go pick it up. I might add it into my anniversary's coming, and I just want an excuse to play Liberation again.
There you go. Final Fantasy VII, we finally have a release date on that. That is hitting March 26th, also hitting Xbox, same day. Chocobo Mystery Dungeon is hitting March 20th. That one, I believe, is also hitting PS4. Final Fantasy IX is out today! That was a pretty cool one to just be like, hey, it's here. And it also released on Xbox same day. So that is nice. Awesome. $21. Weird price, but worth it.
So weird.
I love 9. Really good game.
I played Crystal Chronicles. When they say we're remastering Crystal Chronicles, I'm like, bitch, I'm down.
Yeah, that's not hitting Xbox.
No, probably not. But a girl can dream.
It would be amazing to see Crystal Chronicles on all platforms with crossplay.
Yes.
That would be amazing.
I had that shit on a GameCube back in the day. I say back in the day. I was on bed rest, so I was pregnant with number one. Yeah, not that long ago.
I just peeked over. I still have it on GameCube. I forgot I had that.
It's so good.
It is. I enjoyed that one. Astral Chain, a new game coming from Platinum Games. That's launching August 30th.
They didn't waste any time after Scalebound got canceled.
they're just, they have so many projects going. It's nuts.
Yeah.
And then they said that Bayonetta 3 is still doing pretty well in development, and they'll give an update on that game at a later date, obviously.
Yeah.
And then the final game they showed, The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening full remake, hitting 2019. I am so fucking excited that Link's Awakening is getting a remake.
It looks good, too.
Everyone's like, Ocarina is the best. Majora's Mask is the best. A Link to the Past is the best. No, Link's Awakening is my favorite game in the Zelda franchise.
I remember playing Link's Awakening.
Everyone tries to say that it, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the 3D one, so Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask are already gone, like, in consideration for the best Zelda game in my eyes. Everyone says it's A Link to the Past. I think A Link to the Past is just a little bit too long. There's just too much in the game. Link's Awakening is the perfect length.
Yeah. Can we just go ahead and put it on record that Mika don't get no more reviews? I'm just going to cut that down right now.
Yeah, she's fired. Dark Mika in chat saying Zelda is garbage in general. Well, then you haven't played the right Zelda games.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could hate Zelda games.
Look.
I guess if you hate Joy.
I am pretty prone to being like, I don't understand why people like this with a lot of games, but with Zelda, bitch, please.
I've never bothered to play any of them. They all look boring as shit. Then you can't judge them if you've never played them.
Okay.
What the hell?
Mika with the negative ass hot takes.
But yeah, that was the Nintendo Direct.
Sounds good.
So was just Assassin's Creed the game that you were excited about?
I mean, that and Tsum Tsum. Honesty's the best policy.
Oh, God. We joked around about Crystal Chronicles having full crossplay. In an interview with Game Informer, Sony's Sean Layden said that Sony is, quote, open for business when it comes to console crossplay.
I feel like they've got beat in the head so much they don't have much choice.
The thing is, the negative thing is that the claim was refuted by two developers in particular calling bullshit on what Sean said. Hi-Rez Studios chimed in saying that they had crossplay available on all platforms except the PS4 because of Sony, and that they're ready to go with Smite Paladins and Realm Royale whenever Sony gets their shit together. And then we covered this one last week. Chucklefish, the developers of Wargroove, stated that they were flat out told crossplay wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So, Sony, you need to get your shit together. And it's, you know, this whole selective crossplay thing, it's a nice start, but just let it happen, man.
It's weird because it seems like they're only letting it happen on big enough titles that it gets negative attention if they don't allow it.
Like, and then there's weird indies that we're going to be talking about later that do have it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't get what is going on with Sony. If they're open for business, they need to be open to everybody and not just certain people.
Right. It's a weird thing. And it makes it hard to do our job because we're like, everything we play and we have to talk about, does it have crossplay or is it just not PlayStation or, you know, it makes it tough to even keep up with. Oh, or are you going to be able to play with people on another console?
Gray Quantum, survive alone, Sony.
Yeah. They're going to crash and burn. It's not doing them any favors.
Yeah, hopefully they get their shit together because it's good for everyone.
Yeah.
Crossplay is good for everybody.
And Sony only likes for things to be good for them, though.
Yeah. On the topic of crossplay, the Rocket League Friends update is happening soon. And
yay!
In my notes, it just says defer to Cole.
I may or may not have a tab open just so I could talk about this.
That's what I expected.
I was prepared. So as far as cross-platform play goes, it's active. It's been active for about a week and a half now.
And that's all platforms.
All platforms.
That includes Sony. So all platforms cross-play on Rocket League.
Look, I'm gonna deviate for a second, and I'm going to throw a little bit of shade.
Oh, God.
because their whole argument for not wanting crossplay was that it wasn't good for kids. And I can guarantee you that every person I have ran into that has been on PlayStation were toxic as shit. They were just mega cuntsicles. And I'm sitting here going, why were you worried about us?
Cuntsicles. That's a good one.
Every time I log into Rocket League now, I get a notification that action has been taken against the counter or reported.
Oh, God.
Every time I log in, that's how bad it's got. And I'm okay with it. At least they're doing something about it. But I just find it. And look, when a woman says she finds something funny, it's not funny. Okay?
Okay.
But I find it incredibly funny that they didn't want to open up crossplay because they said Xbox players would be toxic to the children that play on PlayStation. And it's definitely been the other way around in my experience. I didn't have the same experience when Steam players were integrated and Nintendo Switch. I think that's the biggest tell-all, is that we've been playing with Nintendo and Steam players for a while now.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd have to report people every now and then. One of the weird things I've noticed, especially in competitive Rocket League, is that it's like the lower ranked people are, the bigger shitheads they are. And
does that mean I'm a gigantic shithead since I'm awful at Rocket League?
I mean, if you start telling people to forfeit before the game countdown has even happened, probably.
I apologize to my teammates. I was playing Rocket League with some friends last night, and it was all 2-on-2 matches. And every time I was matched with someone, I would just be like, I'm sorry, we're losing.
But that's how you learn. And the weirdest thing for me, especially where we swapped to competitive about 2 seasons ago. And the weirdest thing to me is that people just, they don't see playing you as worth their time. And this is, again, where it's even worse with PlayStation players. Like, if I'm getting my ass kicked, so be it. I'm going to at least try to, like, see if I can't switch it up in the end. Even if I can't come back and win, I want to see if I can at least start scoring on you and figure you out.
Yeah.
But as soon as, like, somebody is 2 goals ahead, they want to start hollering forfeit. And that's so weird to me because me and Studa have been down by 5 and come back and won by 3.
You know? Wow.
I mean, that shit can happen.
I could have used you 2 on the one game that we were playing last night. Me and the one guy, we lost 16-0.
Wow.
16-0.
I did beat, I think my record with Studa was like 24-25.
Want to know the worst part? I was the high scoring person on my team with,
I'm
like,
so proud of you.
180 points.
You tried and you're getting better. Remember when we were playing and you weren't even getting enough points to earn XP?
Yeah.
So you're doing so much better now.
Oh, yeah. I'm worlds better.
Mika says that it isn't as bad with Steam people because they don't use mice. But that's the thing with Rocket League, it's all text chat. Like, they have voice now, they added it a while back, but nobody uses it. Everybody just uses the text chat.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people, and the weirdest thing, I got censored in text chat. Oh, do Steam people even, oh yeah, they'll text chat. Oh, they'll chat up a storm because it's easier for them to type while they're,
yeah, they just have a keyboard.
Yeah, Xbox, we have to press the back button and type it in with the controller. It takes us a while. Steam people, they just, wee, and they go. Fuck them. At least the PlayStation people, if they're going to tell you to forfeit, it takes them a while. But I forgot what I was talking about beyond that.
Shit. I don't remember. It's about the Friends update, and then you went on a tangent.
I mean, I can't help myself sometimes. Anyway, Friends update. We've had cross-platform play for a while, but on the 19th, I believe it is. Let me check my leak. Yeah, 19th. We are getting the Friends update, which will actually bring a Friends list into the game menu so that you can create a Rocket ID and actually bring your friends from other consoles into your party. Like, as it is now, it's just, oh, we're on Xbox, but we can match up with people who aren't. This will make it to where we're on Xbox, but so-and-so's on Steam or PlayStation
and
or
you can
Nintendo.
Party up together.
And they're in my party now. So that's a big deal, because we haven't had that ability to just, like, yeah, you could play with them, but you couldn't set up and play together.
Yeah.
So this is just another way to knock out the barriers as far as crossplay goes. For the Rocket ID though, I hope you like your username because they're taking the Discord approach for it, and they're just using your username with four random numbers at the end.
Yeah.
So you can change your word portion, but your random numbers will stick.
Yeah.
So jokes on whoever gets 6969.
0420, LOLOL.
They are adding a recent players tab as well. And that's going to be nice because it'll make it easier to report the motherfuckers that are jerks. I'm down for this.
Oh, shit.
Season 9 rewards will go out for competitive. They're going to add extra training. I don't ever use any of that, but you'll be able to do drop shot and hoops and snow day in training now. Which I guess it was kind of necessary. They added those to, they make competitive leagues for the alternative versions.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, but you couldn't practice them. So the only way to play them was to play them competitively. So at least now you'll be able to practice and, you know, good luck getting grand champ in Rumble or drop shot. people are assholes in those too. but yeah, it's a big, nice update. Oh, hold up. They were going to do an in-game event. Aw. What? They changed this. I hadn't read this until just now.
Good You're thing getting I had that, breaking news.
I did. It was a good thing I had that open. Usually they do in-game events, and they were going to do one for Valentine's Day, and because I hadn't played it yet today, I haven't had time to do jack shit today. I hadn't looked to see if it had gone live. But basically, you play, and they'll give you some kind of little fake currency, and you can use it to open boxes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently they decided, because of unforeseen events behind the scenes, they had to cancel it. So they're going to do another one later in the year, but we will not get a Valentine's Day. Yeah.
Friend updates more important anyway.
Yeah, to make it up to us, they're giving everybody the opportunity to get lots of in-game stuff via a weekend of combined double XP and double painted drop rates starting March 7th.
What are painted drop rates?
So painted drops, basically when you get an item, it can be certified, it can be regular, but it can also be certified or painted or both. Certified ones basically track certain types of activities that you do in the game. Like they'll say, like, get so many backwards goals to level it up or whatever. There's an achievement tied to those, but they don't really have any other purpose beyond that.
Yeah.
But painted ones, again, I think there was a painted achievement. I've had all the achievements for a while. I don't remember. show off, but it's basically just when an item drops, it can be a different color.
Yeah.
And so, for rare items, that's kind of a big deal. If you get one and it's, like, a really cool painted color. Like, my unicorn horn on my Takumi is purple. And I've seen a lot of people with unicorn horns, but I've never seen another purple one.
That's cool.
So, yeah, it's pretty tough to get the cool painted colors like that. I always end up getting, like, stupid ones too when I get, like, oh, you got an import body and it's maroon. And I'm like, what? You don't have any control over that. So if they're doubling it, you stand to get better stuff at prettier colors more often. So yeah, that's starting up on the 7th. So at least there's that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is that all the Rocket news?
That's all the Rocket news.
All right, little bit more news we have. Two games were added to the backward compatibility lineup this week with King of Fighters 13 and Orcs Must Die.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool. Two more games. Especially, we didn't get anything last week, so I'm happy it wasn't like, oh, they're done. We did everything we could.
Yeah. No, they're still going at it. Slow and steady wins the race.
THQ Nordic's acquisition spree has continued. Have you heard this?
No. What did they get this time?
Warhorse Studios.
What?
Yeah, they acquired the developers behind Kingdom Come Deliverance. They are now officially part of THQ Nordic.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good combination. That should work out pretty well.
And then final bit of news I have. Activision is laying off 8% of its staff, which equates to nearly 800 people being laid off. This is coming despite the fact that 2018 saw record profits for Activision. Activision states that it would be cutting mainly non-game development departments like publishing and esports. Mm-hmm. But when your company is making money hand over fist and you're laying off nearly 1,000 people, there's some assholes in charge there.
Yeah, I think Activision is trying to take over EA's award for worst developer and publisher. You know what was funny was, I think it was PC Gamer posted an article, and the headline was that Ubisoft also had a record-breaking year.
And they didn't lay off 800
people. And like, that's...
Throwing shade.
That's not just, like, shots fired. That's a machine gun.
We had a good year, too, and we didn't lay off 800 people, so...
Fuck you guys. I think some of the layoffs were to be expected. At least a few, because they did break up with Bungie.
And they confirmed that poor sales of Destiny 2 are the reason for the breakup.
Yeah. And then, so you know that, what's the one studio? It's like Vicarious Visions or something like that, that was working to support Bungie. Obviously, they're not necessary anymore.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't be surprised to see a press release saying, oh yeah, Bungie is going to acquire them or soak up some of their laid off employees or something. But I mean, it made sense for certain parts to get the boot, but a lot of the rest of it is just very weird. Yeah. At the same time, that's what big businesses do. I mean, that's corporate America. There are literally people whose jobs are to sit in an office, look at the numbers, and people go, oh, well, they just think the developers are numbers on a spreadsheet, but that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
They look at the people and they go, okay, they've been here for this many years and they get paid this much money, and I can hire this dude and give him the exact same job title and pay him this much instead. Bye. It happens. That's their whole job. They pay people to do that more than they pay them to make the fucking games.
Yeah.
That's corporate America, unfortunately.
Hooray.
The way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah, sucks for those 800 people losing jobs, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I'm sorry for them, because it does blow at the same time. I mean, it's, you expect it, it's a thing, it happens, but it sucks. And, you know, I don't know if they're going to get the same kind of support rally behind them that people did when Telltale closed. I hope they do.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, Ninja Theory's hiring.
Yeah, there you go.
So, come make
I know 343, they announced that they would be, you know, they're hiring as well. So, you know, there's options out there for people.
Yeah. So it's, you know, for everyone that, hey, look, Ubisoft had a record year, maybe though. Let's see what Red Storm's up to, you know?
Yeah.
I hear they got a game coming out that could use a little bit of help. So, I don't know. Hope for the best for them, but it's a thing.
It's a shame. But, yeah, that's all the news I got. A lot of news.
Yeah.
That was a nice chunk of time put into all that news.
Thanks, Nintendo. Running my ass.
Hey, you're the one who went off on like a 20-minute tangent on Rocket League.
And Assassin's Creed.
I was about to say Rock Band.
You wish I went on a tangent about Rock Band.
I know. I could go on a tangent about Rock Band, but I won't.
Probably could, yeah.
I could always go on tangents about Rock Band. Two good songs coming out for Rock Band this week with Hoobastank's The Reason and Matchbox 20's Push. Though there's some Rock Band news.
How is Rock Band still going?
Well, I will. Well, I will. Oh, and we got a copyright strike.
Yep. No monetization for us, motherfuckers.
Never. Never at all. But yeah, that's the news. Should we move on to reviews? Because we got a lot to talk about.
Goddamn.
There is a lot. So I hope you are ready to go.
Yeah. Wait, right, well, I got to find the right. There we go. Right notepad.
You got the right notepad?
I'm good. I'm good.
First game to talk about tonight is called Jump Force, developed by Spike Chunsoft, published by Bandai Namco, released February 15th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $59.99. For the first time ever, the famous manga heroes are thrown into a whole new battleground, our world, uniting to fight the most dangerous threat. The Jump Force will bear the fate of the entire humankind. Tell us, what is this game about?
So, your typical group of villains from the Jump anime universe have come together under the guidance of a big bad, and they want to merge the realities together so that they can take over them all, rule the world, and all the worlds. Which is, I'm not familiar with all of the nuances of the Jump anime universe.
Yeah, there's a lot of properties in Jump.
I'm familiar enough with them that I recognize the characters. Like, I recognize Luffy, I recognize Naruto, I recognize Goku, and the Death Note dude, I can't even remember his name, but I recognize it. Isn't it L? I think it's just L.
Yeah, I know.
And then the demon that chills with him is Ryu. Maybe? Ryuk? That's it. Yeah.
Anyway. You're going to go on a tangent about characters.
I mean, you have to, because that's the bread and butter of this game. Like, it's an epic crossover, and it's incredibly ambitious in that regard. Like I said, the villains from this universe have all come together, and they're corrupting humans, which then become known as Venoms. And basically, your goal is to stop that shit from happening by fighting and kicking the shit out of their asses.
Nice. It's a
fantastically brilliant concept for a fighting game. After being hit by Frieza's blast. Frieza's one of the bad guys. I knew that, and I was so proud of myself. I was like, look at this bitch just shooting light rays all over the place. your character is basically a random human, and he's just walking down the street while all this shit is happening. And he gets hit by Frieza's blast, and he's on the brink of death, and Trunks has no choice but, in order to save him, to give him one of the Umbra cores and turn him into a hero. So that's how your character gets brought into all of this. You get to go through a character select screen. You're like making a little anime sim.
Nice.
You get to change literally everything. You choose male, female, you choose your hairstyle, you choose your hair color, your hair highlight colors, just your breast size, obviously, because anime. and then you can even choose different types of abilities eventually for your character from what are called J skills. And you'll be able to, like, give yourself abilities that other characters typically have, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you have to unlock them with time. After you've created your character, who you choose a voice for your character, but they never say anything. Like, the most they say is, yeah, while they're in the fights and stuff.
Yeah, you need a voice for that.
That's basically it. Although I will say it's incredibly funny to pick the super high pitched voice. That's like very Sailor Moonish voice. Pick that one and then listen to it say Kamehameha.
Nice.
It's hilarious. Everything is so serious in these fights. Like, there's this incredible, attention to detail in this 3D world and the backdrops for the fight arenas and where they happen. And there's, all this attention to detail in the characters. You know, they, even as they're getting their asses kicked, you just start to see, like, you know, there's blood stains on their clothes and everything. And then you just hear, Kamehameha! And you can't help but enjoy it.
Oh, God. And
I am easily amused. And this is my most favorite part of the game.
Oh, Lord.
So once you've gone through all the tutorials and stuff and you know how to use your character's newfound abilities, you get thrust into the world. There's an odd hub world. And even the game is just like, yeah, we know it's weird. Everybody makes that face when we come here. And you're just like, what? But there's this super weirdly realistic, almost kind of spaceship looking hub world. And it's split into different arenas, and the heroes are actually split into three different types of teams. So, like, one's a team of pirates, and then one's a team of, like, intel, and then there's a more, you know, aggressive defense-type team with certain characters in those lineups. And you get to choose one of those teams to join to carry on your path. For a campaign, there's individual chapters and fights that you'll go through to work your way through the story to stop all the villains. But you can also play individual free missions, which are just you walk up to the mission shelves and be like, hi, I'd like a mission. It's like a shop almost. And then there's a selection of missions you can choose from that you can just play at any point in time. And then you're given a rank as to how well you do and what kind of criteria you meet. And it could be something as simple as, like, complete the fight with 60% of your health, or to use a certain type of ability, or win with Goku on your team, something like that, will help bring up your rank. There are also varied difficulties. You can play on the easy ones. You can play on the harder ones. I do have one complaint about this, and it doesn't seem to matter what the difficulty is. The AI are massive assholes and will spend 95% of the match blocking. It's so frustrating. Like, you're sitting there just laying into them, doing all these super cool ass moves, and they're just sitting there behind their little fucking shields. Goku's the worst. Goku is the absolute worst. Him and his little bubble shield just sitting there like, ah! And I'm like, no, fuck you, die. This might be why I was in a bad mood today.
Maybe.
Because I've spent all day just kicking the shit out of Goku's shield. That said, when you can actually get an attack to break through, getting it started and getting those combos going is so satisfying. And watching the characters just fling themselves around in this big 3D arena, it's really cool. The destruction is cool. I wish that the destruction physics, though, were permanent, because you'll see, like, old parts of the road and stuff will bust up when you slam somebody into it, but then when it comes out of the animation, it's all just the road again. So I do wish that there was a little more attention to detail there.
Yeah.
Where it's just, if I'm actually pummeling the shit out of people and destroying the world, I want the world to look rough at the end of the fight.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a disappointment.
That might be a technical limitation.
It could be. Because they are large areas. And for the most part, they look very good. But I do just wish that the destruction at least leaves some, like, gravel on the damn ground or something.
Street sweeper came by.
Yeah, it came by while we were just kicking the shit out of each other. It's fine. It's okay. The characters are also kind of stuck with, like, a plastic appearance. It's really hard to describe. Because it's weird in the first place to see these kind of anime characters that I typically envision in a 2D format And to see them in a 3D format, it's cool, but it's also like, yeah, that stiff-ass hair is a whole different story.
Yeah.
When you're in a 3D world. And it does look a little off-putting. I would have liked to have seen a little bit better animation as far as that goes. Even in some of the cutscenes with... there was one in particular with... it's a Dragon Ball character and I can't think of his name. God damn it. It's not Frieza because I knew that one. But there's another one of the characters and he's walking past some of the Venoms and it doesn't even look like their feet are touching the ground. They're just kind of like
oddly like
levitating. Like they're not properly snapped to the textures. And it's just like, yeah... There's room for a little improvement here.
Yeah.
Likewise, the hub world itself, really fucking big. And there's just a lot of repetition. I don't understand having such large areas chunked off for the three different groups when they could have just been like in the center hub world in three different areas.
Yeah.
Because they've got these big, distinct worlds. And they're pretty, but they're not... functional or effective.
Just kind of lifeless.
Yeah, and really the only benefit to it is if you're playing online, the area gets populated with other online players.
Oh,
and so
cool.
You can actually, you can emote, you can view people's player cards, you can invite them to fight. So that's actually really neat. You don't have to go through matchmaking. If you see somebody in the actual arena and just be like, hi, I want to kick your ass. Let's go. That's fantastic. But yeah, that's really the long and short of it is just a whole lot of destruction and kicking people's asses. The story could have used a little more. It just felt kind of generic.
Yeah. Oh, there's anime.
But it's anime. And at the same time, it's what I kept trying to tell myself. I'm like, I'm looking for something that the genre just does not allow. Just look at the jiggle physics. And that's really the best you can go with there. That said, it was really cool. It was funny because I'm a button masher when it comes to playing fighting games, but the combos and stuff are easy enough to do that I was picking them up fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And I was actually a little more disappointed that I couldn't activate bigger strings of combos because they are not dumbed down in a bad way, but just like consolidated to be easy to use that I couldn't just forcefully like rotate my fingers enough to make a bigger string. Eventually I hit a wall and that was just the best you could do for the combos.
Yeah. Well, overall, what do you think of this one?
I do give it a try. I think if you're a fan of the Jump anime universe, this is the kind of like fan service crossover that you're going to be thrilled by. Just plain and simple. Seeing all these different characters, you know, in one space and interacting with each other, that's the highlight of the game. It's a solid fighter. It's an effective fighter. But really, it's more...
It's about the fan service than the gameplay.
Yeah, than any kind of plot or anything. So it was a little harder sell for somebody like me who was going for a plot. Because it's not there.
Yeah.
But I do give it a solid try.
Cool. I might have to check that one out.
Yep.
Next game to talk about is called EVOLAND Legendary Edition, developed and published by Shiro Games, released February 8th on Xbox One for $19.99. EVOLAND Legendary Edition brings you two great and unique RPGs with their graphic style and gameplay changing as you progress through the game. Full of humor and references to classic games, the EVOLAND series brings a truly epic and extraordinary adventure unlike anything you've ever played before. Cole, tell us about it.
I find it funny that it says... unlike anything you've ever played before, because the whole premise of the game is like, it's a walkthrough of before. RPG. It's just trope on top of trope on top of trope. That said, they do a really unique job with it, and it's incredibly charming. You have a generic green-gray pixeled screen to start with, and the only thing you can do is walk right. You walk right, you hit a chest, you get the ability to walk left. Walk left, hit a chest, now you can keep carrying on. And just the more chests you find, the more your game evolves with the way that RPGs have evolved over the years of gaming. It's so cool to watch it go from this, like, that green-gray pixel job
like we had. Screen.
Game Boy, yeah. And then eventually seeing it get, 16-bit colors and getting sound effects added to it. And now you have music, and now you have 3D graphics, and now you have an overworld, and now you have a sword, and now monsters unlocked. And it's so much fun to just explore and gradually see the elements be added to the game as you go.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you never unlock a dash or a run, though. And that becomes a pain in the ass. because it's very heavily modeled. If you're excited for Link's Awakening remaster, this is a good teaser to get you started. There's definitely some very heavy Zelda influence going on here.
I mean, the character's name is Clink.
Yeah, but you can change it.
You can, but why would you?
You can change all the character names, which is a little weird. Like, even the NPCs, when you meet them, you can change their name. And I was like, oh, that's a thing. Okay. Weird. And it makes it hard because sometimes you'll fuck around and you change one's name, and then they're like, oh, there's that so-and-so's house. And I'm like, who? Oh, yeah, that guy.
That's what you get for changing NPCs' names.
I just wanted to see if it was actually going to let me or if it was a goof. And it actually let me.
Naming everyone Fart Butt or something.
Unicorn farts. Your combat evolves too, along with the rest of the gameplay, as you carry, which makes sense. Evoland. You start off with just the ability to press X and slash monsters in the overworld. And then as it carries on, it turns into a full-fledged RPG. This is both one of the upsides and the downsides to this game, though, is the RPG element. Like, it's super cool when it first gets introduced, but then it never really fleshes out to more. You have the ability to use items, you have the ability to use, magic when you have a certain other character with you. And it's neat, but you keep thinking, okay, there's going to be more that gets added. This is going to flesh out more, and it doesn't.
No.
It's just click attack, click attack, click attack, end. You win! Yay!
I mean, the plus side is there's two distinct different gameplay modes, whether you're playing the action-adventure style areas or whether you're playing the Final Fantasy style RPG areas.
Right.
And it bounces back and forth, so it does keep it fresh and different as you go through.
Right.
But it is limited in how much there is.
Yeah, it's just, it never quite hits a peak RPG experience. It's just, always a little RPG light.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but it brings up the other point that the game is kind of short, and you can run through it really quickly.
Well, the good thing is there's two games to it.
Yeah, that is true.
So you're getting both of the Evoland games that came out on Steam. You're getting both of them in one package.
Yes.
Granted, they're not huge games, but, you're getting two for the price of one.
But it is a twofer. I had a lot of fun with it. I know it's easy to sit here and bust and say, oh, well, the RPG doesn't get fleshed out. But for somebody like me, it was actually really fine. And the way that the gameplay was set up and the fact that you could just go through it kind of quickly, it doesn't overstay its welcome is what I'm trying to say. And it never gets complicated to the point. Like, I've played some RPGs for reviews, and I've just been sitting here going, I'm never going to learn all this in a week.
Yeah.
And
this you can.
Yeah, this, it's like, look, you're going to sit down, you're going to know what you're doing, and you're going to have a good time. It never tries to be more than it is. I love when it gets to the HD setup, it's just so cute. Everything's stinking adorable. that sounds a little silly. Although that was also one of like the most irritating parts for gameplay, especially because you don't have any kind of dash or run. There's one whole segment where it's like, okay, well, you need bombs and so-and-so has them. So you go to so-and-so.
Oh, God, that... I knew you would bring that up. The fetch quest. They had to have a fetch quest.
They had to have it, but my God damn.
I think the thing that makes that part funnier is because it's modeled after like the PlayStation 1 era RPGs. You would go to screen transitions and it would say now loading.
That was funny. It was a little disc spinning around too.
Yeah.
And I like that you could buy the DVD player from the one.
And it gets rid of the load time. It's just a legitimately fun and funny game.
Yeah, it is charming.
Personally, for $20, I would give it a buy it. It is a little high in price, but I think the fact that you're getting two games, if you look at it as buying two $10 games, I think it makes it a lot more palatable.
Right.
And I think it's worth picking up because they're great fun experiences. If you're a fan of the retro action adventure, retro RPG scene, you're going to get this game. And that's right. The important part. This seems like it's geared towards gamers like me who grew up with Legend of Zelda, who grew up with Final Fantasy, and it just clicks and it works really well.
Okay. I would say even as somebody who is not a hardcore RPG fan, I really had a lot of fun with it. I actually give it a buy it as well. I got most of the references. Occasionally there was the little thing is like, I get the pop culture aspect of it, but I don't understand the specific reference. But I still had a lot of fun and I really enjoyed the way it played.
Awesome. Sounds like we both enjoyed this one.
Yay. Next.
Hooray. Next game to talk about is called Canarium, developed by Zoetrope Interactive, published by Iceberg Interactive. Released February 12th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99. Canarium is a chilling Lovecraftian game which follows a gripping story involving four scientists in their endeavor to challenge what we normally consider to be the absolute limits of nature. Inspired by H.P. Lovecraft's novella At the Mountains of Madness, but largely set after the original story. Dark Mika covered this one, wrote in a review, and here's what she's got to say. Canarium is a horror first-person puzzle game. Think horror-based Myst. You play as Frank. You wake up unsure where you are or what's going on, all while being connected to a weird machine. Turns out you're in the Antarctic in an expedition base. You piece together what's happening and why the expedition is there through notes you find throughout the game. You have to figure out the mystery of what the machine is and does, as well as how it's connected to everything going on in this expedition. Most of this story is missable if you want to ignore it, since it's almost all told via documents and pictures you find in the game. The overall story is explained and shown fairly basically. The documents provide significantly more detail and some of the needed backstory as well. The game has a nice creepy atmosphere that stays throughout almost the entire game. It also has some nice tense moments. Overall, the game can be beaten in around 5 hours without much issue. There's a few places where you can die, but overall acts more like a walking sim puzzle game. It's fairly simple. All the solutions to the puzzles are just turn something or pick up one of the few items and go to the place where it tells you to place them. And simple enough, children can play it, but I think it would probably give younger ones nightmares.
Wow.
My biggest criticism for the game is the voice acting. It is not that good. Remember Past Cure, where they spoke English fine, but it just sounded off the entire time? Yeah, that's what's happening in this as well. It's just off and it's very noticeable. It seems like it gets better as the game goes on, or maybe I just got used to it. The writing for notes and stuff is fine, though, which just makes the voice acting feel all the more off. I am willing to revoice the entire game if you would like.
Wow.
For $30, I'd have to say to wait for a sale unless you like really creepy, interesting stories. The concept is really nice. Follow through is less so, but again, it has good creepy atmosphere. So it's not a bad game. It's just not top tier amazing game or anything. So I say wait for a sale. I would get it around $10-$15 because it has a lot of empty space in it, like walking sims, but there's not a lot of story filling it, unlike many others. Everything being in notes is great, but when you're constantly walking, there's not really anything going on. It gets a bit boring. It's just too empty and things take too long to get to. Had they filled it up or made places much closer to each other, it'd be a lot better. But it not being the case, it ends up wrecking the flow. Not bad.
Don't you dare say bad things about my favorite genre.
I knew you would be jealous that you didn't get to cover that one.
Yeah, I saw it earlier and I was like, aw. Shit.
But that's okay, because you got more stuff to cover.
I have so much more to cover.
You do, like Minesweeper Genius, developed by MGaia, published by Blowfish Studios, released February 12th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $5.99. Train your brain, help Aristotle sweep the minefield, regain his memory, and escape from the alien scientific experiments, discovering where all the bombs are hidden. Cole, tell us about it.
This is super weird and unique take on Minesweeper, and I absolutely loved it.
I love this game, too.
I did not expect to like this so well. I loaded it up, and I'm just like, why am I having so much fun? But it's fun, and it's challenging. So basically, with Minesweeper, you know, click on the tiles and don't hit a mine. So in this case, you're trying to guide your little character, whose name is Aristotle, around a grid. Each grid is broken down into tiles that are in rows and columns. And at the end of each row, or at the top of all the rows and columns, is a light bulb. And if there are mines in that row or that column, the corresponding light bulb will glow red and give you a number. So you know, oh, there's one, there's two, there's three, or worse, hiding in that row somewhere. The idea is you're going to want to do a little bit of math and figure out, okay, if there's three tiles in this row and two of them are bombs and the last column says that it doesn't have any, then you know the last column is where there's not a bomb.
So it has Picross elements, if you're familiar with Picross.
I'm not.
You're not? Oh,
no,
man.
I've played other puzzlers like this in the past, but I couldn't think of a name offhand if I had to. But that one does not sound familiar. Although, if it was like this, I'd probably play it and enjoy the shit out of it. So basically, you have to navigate Aristotle through the tiles. If you step on one, it's a bomb. You get fucked up. He turns into a little skull and gets to try again. You get three attempts per level. So each attempt is a star. So if you die once, you get to finish the level with two stars. If you do it without any deaths, you finish it with all three. If you lose all your stars, fuck you, we're going to do it again. But it randomizes every time. So your level, you don't get the chance to just like memorize it or go look for a guide.
Yeah, that's what I love about this game, is that it's all randomized. Yeah, they're not all handcrafted puzzles. The first time I failed, I'm like, oh, well, I'll just replay the stage, and now I know which way to go.
But
completely different.
Yeah, you don't get to know which way to go. You're starting all over from scratch again. And even the same, if you do beat the level and you go back and you want to try to get your stars again, you're starting over from scratch all over again. So good luck. You better have learned your fucking lesson.
On the flip side, if you get a really, really tough one that you can't figure out, you could just kill yourself three times and get a fresh puzzle and you might have better luck with that one.
Yeah, it's true. Or you could luck out and it be horrible and be even worse than the one you were stuck on.
And then you just kill yourself again because there's achievements for dying.
Yeah, a lot. One of the things that I found that was really helpful for me though, was to keep a piece of notepaper and draw the puzzle back out and then just put X's where I thought that there were going to be mines and then work it out on paper before I moved the character so that I didn't die.
Oh, you cheater.
Yeah. I are smart cookie. On the plus side, there's no timer, so you don't have to like, and the stars are only limited to your death, so it doesn't matter if you take you know, all day long to figure out a puzzle as long as you just do it without dying.
Mm-hmm.
The puzzles do get larger. They get more complicated as you continue on. There are even advanced levels that you can unlock that are even fucking harder.
Those advanced ones don't fuck around at all.
And they eventually get to where they're even adding in different ways to move around the board. So rather than just, oh, I'm moving one tile at a time, no, now you can step on a switch and it will actually shift a whole row somewhere else, or it will, you know, launch you to another row or another column. It's incredibly creative gameplay, and it's Minesweeper in a way you've never seen it before.
And it works.
Yeah, and it works beautifully. Like, I didn't have any problems with game crashes or anything getting laggy. If I pushed the button, the character went, and the puzzles all made sense. Like, if you really took your time and looked at it and thought it out, there's no reason to not beat one.
Yeah. Well, overall, but $6. What do you think of it?
This is a definite buy it. I had so much fun. I did not, again, I was like, I have to play this for a review and I'm going to get through it. And then I sit down and I'm like, why am I still playing this when I know I can review it? I'm done, but I'm going to go back and get all these fucking 3 stars because I'm dedicated to the cause.
See, I don't move on unless I get 3 stars. I'm that guy.
I will, like, I'll move on through the whole island, but then I'll go back. I won't go to the next island until I've gotten 3 stars on the whole island, but then I'll go on after that.
That works. Yeah, I agree. $6. This is a no-brainer. It's cheap. It's fun. It's an awesome mix of Minesweeper and Picross. It is just really, really cool. I bought it. I think you should buy it. How's that?
Indeed.
Because we only got one review code and you got it. So I bought it on my own and it was worth every penny. I loved it.
It's definitely worth it.
And it's adorable.
Yeah.
Next game to talk about is called Glass Masquerade, developed by Onyx Loot and Stage Clear Studios, published by Digirati, released February 5th on PS4, 8th on Xbox One and Switch for $11.99. Welcome to Glass Masquerade, an artistic puzzle game inspired by Art Deco and stained glass artisans of the 20th century. Combine hidden glass pieces to unveil clocks and themes exhibited by various cultures of the world at the International Times Exhibition, an interactive electronic show. Cole, tell us about this one.
Have you ever wanted to take a piece of stained glass art and just like throw it on the ground and shatter it and then put it together like a puzzle?
Yes.
Okay, well, here's your chance to do it without ruining actual stained glass art.
Oh, that's half the fun.
I know, but this is basically somebody's done that part for you.
So they did the fun part of smashing shit and it's our job to put it back together.
You get to put it back together.
That works.
This is an incredibly pretty game and the art is so well done. The gameplay of it is relaxing. The levels are laid out. They show you how difficult the puzzle is going to be. You can choose to go, you know, where in the world you want at a time. As long as you've done the prerequisite puzzle. Oh my God, I can't talk. then and unlocked it. You can go wherever you want as you progress. You're not locked into, oh, you have to do this 5-star difficulty puzzle before you can go do a 3. You know? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it's out there. It's how difficult it's going to be. And you can choose to do it or go somewhere else instead. There's also a hint system involved. Because if you like puzzle, and I don't mean puzzles as in, like, solutions finding puzzles, but I mean actual jigsaw puzzle type puzzles.
Yeah.
If you like playing those or putting those kind of puzzles together, you have one little trick that makes it a lot easier to do, and that's that you can find the edge pieces. Once you've got the edge pieces, you know how everything else comes together.
Yeah.
Well, because these stained art glasses are parts of clocks, they're round.
Oh.
And so there isn't an actual edge piece to be found to start with. So you can go into the options and select to have it show you the edge pieces. And so the pieces of the puzzle are surrounding the clock on kind of like a wheel basis on each side.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just pick them up, click on them, and put them where you want in the puzzle. And if that's the proper place for it, it sticks. But those pieces are silhouetted when they're down. So you can't see the art that's on them. You can only see the shape. So if you turn on the hint system to where it shows you which are the edge pieces, it makes those edge pieces glow red. And you still don't have... It helps out to pick out how to get you started so you can see what kind of puzzle you're going to be working with and what it should be looking like.
Mm-hmm.
But not to the point that it gives everything away. You're still going to take some time. Some of the puzzles that I did, one took me 35 minutes.
Wow.
And that was my record time on it.
Oh my God.
So they get pretty intense. Especially the later ones, because they're broken down into such small pieces that are so oddly shaped. Sometimes it can be really difficult to tell which ones are supposed to go in a certain place, because when you're holding it over the clock face, it looks larger than the area you're trying to put it in, even though the shape is right. Because basically it's a depth perception thing. The clock is behind and the puzzle piece is above, so it's going to look bigger than where it needs to go, but it can throw you off too, because you are so locked into trying to fit pieces into such tiny spots. That said, I thought it was just an incredibly relaxing game, and I enjoyed it so much. There's timers in that it tracks how long it takes you to do it, and if you want to challenge yourself, you can go back and do it again and try to get a better time. But you're not locked into that time. That's just more of a, hey, this is how long it took you to do it, good job kind of thing.
Gotcha.
There aren't any stars that you got to try to get. There's not any kind of challenge. It's just, here's the art, here's the puzzle, put it together.
I like that.
Yeah. All of the achievements are obtainable just by putting the pieces together. You don't have to struggle or fight with it. It's just relax. I thought it was a good palate cleanser for games that have you just rushing. Apex Legends came out recently. There's been a whole lot of go, 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 and playing Apex Legends. And it was nice to just sit back late at night, put my feet up, and put some puzzles together. Yeah, and just relax. And that's probably what I'm going to do all day tomorrow.
Nice. Then for $12, what do you think of this one?
Absolutely buy it. Absolutely buy it. If you like any kind of jigsaw puzzles at all and you like to be challenged, then you're going to have a good time. And you're going to get to relax while you're doing it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Next game to talk about is called Euclidean Skies, developed and published by Miro Straka, released February 5th on Steam for $9.99. Euclidean Skies combines marvelous architecture and turn-based movements to create a beautiful world with mind-bending puzzles. The game's focus is on shifting and rotating the world to gain tactical advantage and overpower the enemies in 55 elegant but incredibly challenging levels. There's another one from Dark Mika, and let's see what she's got to say on this one. Euclidean Skies is a puzzle game with a sprinkling of action, kinda. You play as a young girl who is, well, doing something for some reason somewhere, and the Black Knights of probably evil are trying to stop you. You have to kill all of the probably evil knights to get to the end of the level to move on. The game is set up for all one-hit kills. The knights move in a pattern. If you step onto the tile, they're going to attack, and then you die. If you come at them from an angle or right behind them, or right behind, you kill them. You can do this by moving the tiles around like a Rubik's Cube, though with significantly more moving parts, and your character can move from tile to tile as well as moving the tiles around. It is really trippy. I'm a bit conflicted with the game personally. I really like it as I love puzzles, and this one really gets fucking hard, especially if you're trying to complete each level's challenge, which is usually for completing it while only moving your character X amount of times. That amount is enough to move once per enemy you have to kill and once to get through the next doorway, no more, no less. That means you have to do everything perfect, which is, well, calling it difficult would be like calling Godzilla a big lizard. It starts off nice and easy and ramps up really hard, really fast. I got stuck on, I think, level 11 out of 36, excluding the tutorial, which is where my issue really is. The tutorial, where to start? Oh, no. Well, first, I guess it's 20 levels on its own. Yeah, that's right. It's almost as large as the campaign. Second is that there's no text in the tutorial. Third is that nothing, shall I say it again, no fucking thing is explained to you or told to you in the tutorial. I had to figure it out on my own. Hell, I didn't even know it had a pause menu till I was on level 18 of the tutorial, simply because my head was hurting from the puzzle and I was trying to figure out how to save and quit for a while to let my brain recharge. The campaign explained and told me more about how to play the game than the tutorial did.
Oh, no.
Now, maybe I don't know what the word tutorial means, but I'm pretty damn sure it means that there's a tutor that I'm pretty damn sure it means that it's there to tutor you in what you're supposed to do. Now, I will say the 20-ish levels that the tutorial has ramp up in difficulty more slowly than the main campaign, and honestly, most of them are a lot smaller with a lot less parts, even its hardest one was smaller than level 11 in the campaign. So the tutorial is all around easier, but it doesn't explain shit to you. The campaign does. That personally, really, we'll call it upset. Yeah, I like that. It upset me. Mostly because as enjoyable as cussing is, even for Joe or whoever reading this, I'm pretty sure I know more vulgarities and more languages than any of them combined. So yeah, I won't go down that path today. Regardless, it is fun once you figure out exactly how everything works, and as long as you like hard puzzles, because these get stupidly hard exceedingly quick. For $10 on Steam, I'd say it's a get it. Do the campaign first, because the tutorial is about as useful as a sex toy made of broken glass and rusty sharp pins.
Wow.
If you don't like hard puzzles or puzzles at all, then steer away from this. There's no real story to it. If you like puzzles and want a challenge, then this is for you. I'm still questioning whether I personally like it or not. I think I do, but I'm not a masochist, so it's starting to make me feel like one. Interesting. Yikes. So it sounds like it's a good game. It just needs more of a tutorial-ish tutorial.
Yeah. Yikes.
still sounds good.
I'm still stuck on the glass rusty dildo.
Yeah, Dark Mika has a way with words, even if I can't read them all sometimes. Next game to talk about is called Hyper Jam, developed and published by BitDragon, released February 12th on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99, PC for $12.99, and features full crossplay. Yes, even PS4. Hyper Jam is a neon-soaked arena brawler full of lethal weapons, stackable power-ups, furious combat, and a killer synthwave soundtrack. Cole, tell us about it.
So this is a multiplayer-only game. There's no single player campaign whatsoever. So I hope that you like being stuck in a lobby with three other players and just killing each other brutally over and over and over.
Beating the shit out of each other.
Just literally just absolute savagery. That is exactly what you're going to get. It is kind of dystopian cyberpunk theme. There's a lot of, a hot pink and teal and gray coloration going on here. There were a handful of arenas that you could choose from for your battles.
I think there's what, six of them?
I think there were about six. And I think that was probably my biggest complaint about the game is that there's only about six. You run through them pretty quickly and then that's that. When you are playing a multiplayer match. Now you can play alone against bots. The bots just are cheating, dirty bastards. So don't waste your time.
Yeah, fuck the bots.
Try to find an online match. You can find online against random. Actually, was really surprised at how easy it was because I complain all the time when I have to do a review game and online matches because of the times that I play. It's hard to find other people there. But I didn't have any trouble. I played this several different times and all kinds of different times of the day. And because of the crossplay, I was always hooked up with at least one or two other humans to play with. Not necessarily a full lobby every time, but enough that I was having fun. As you guys pummel the shit out of each other, you can use a variety of different weapons. They will spawn up around the map at random. There's bow and arrow, there's rockets, there's grenade launchers, there's a katana, there's a big ass hammer.
The hammer.
Yeah, that hammer does work. I'm a fan of the bow and arrows, but the grenade launcher fucks up everybody all at once. And so if you can catch people like in a fight and you've got the grenade launcher, you can just hang back and blow up everybody and like double kill. It's like, yeah, fuck you dummies.
Yeah, boy.
See me over there.
Or the rocket launcher, especially when you get a homing shot.
Yeah. As far as I could tell, the homing shot was just from like holding and letting it charge.
I think so. I think you have to be targeting someone too.
Yeah, and it just kind of did it randomly. But it was an interesting pain in the ass to learn to use the rocket. That's why I like the grenade launcher, because like you could ricochet it off of walls and stuff and just landed at people's feet and they didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
Compared to the rocket launcher, which is all like beep 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 and everybody knows that shit's about to fire. Lost my train of thought.
Gameplay's fun. You just beat the shit out of each other in between rounds. They have power-ups that you're able to pick from. Last place gets first pick and it goes through in order of who sucks the most, usually me, to who sucks the least, usually you or the computer.
The downside is that if you're doing well, you're kind of punished because you don't get any say over what perks you're getting. You just have to deal with whatever you get. It's an equalizer, and I understand why it's done that way. It's to balance things out, but it's still a pain in the ass.
Because I think it makes sense. If you suck the most, you get the first pick of what you want to see what can help you the most.
The other aspect, strategy aspect to that, is that if you know that somebody in the top has a certain perk, you can block them from leveling that perk up. Because if you pick that same perk over and over again, it levels up and it either does more damage, or, you know, like does a greater percent of damage when you use it, or it lasts for longer, or it kicks in quicker. So if you know, if you knew I was using vampirism where I was getting health back for every damage that I did, and you knew I already had it at level 2, and you get to pick first, you can pick vampirism and keep me from leveling up to level 3.
So there's strategy involved.
If you really want to, you know, be careful and play it hardcore. Like, if you're just going into it and you're just smashing it at each other and you don't really care, you can play it however you want and not pay much attention to those perks. If you're playing online, you're going to want to pay more attention to the perk system and how you're using it and what you're choosing. Not just to benefit you, but to drag down others as well.
Yeah.
There were a good variety of perks to choose from. The confusion one is a bitch, and I can't tell you how many times I walked off the map just because I had confusion active. Like, I'd lose whole games just because I'd walk off the map because I was
confused.
Because
you get hit once and your controls get fucked up.
Yeah, they get inverted. And so up is down, down is up, left is right is left. And you're just like, whee! And then I like how it says when you suicide, it's a regret.
Yeah.
But you lose points for that.
I don't think you lose points walking off the edge. I think it's just if you blow yourself up with a weapon.
Could be. Well, no, because there was one I definitely lost points for walking off an edge. I remember it said, that's the point where I was like, that's a lot of points, because you only get, I think, 100 for a kill. But if you suicide, it's 125 that you lose.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, because I was, I think it was the one where I was like 4 points away from being at the end. Basically, with each round, the overall game has a point limit, and each round is last man standing. So you want to fuck off everybody else off of the map, either by killing them or knocking them off or letting them demise their own self. when you die in a battle scenario, you get like a laser beam. And you have a laser that you can shoot down at the remaining players. So again, strategy, if you know that there's a certain player who's ahead and that all they have to do is survive, you're going to want to gang up on them and try to kill them.
Yeah.
The last man standing at the end of the round, and you get points based on how many kills you had, how much damage you did.
Whether or not you killed yourself.
Whether or not you fucked your own self. And then once you get to the point limit for the game, it's not entirely over. It's not just, you reached 1,500 points. That's it. Everybody else sucks. No, you get to play another round because you have to survive. So this gives people who aren't doing well a chance to catch up. Unless you're Joe. There was no hope.
Hey, there was the one that we got to all there, four of us hitting on the survive.
There was one. but basically, everybody gets up to 15, or whoever hits 1,500 points, you have to survive one more round and be the last man standing in order to actually earn the win. This gives other players a chance to catch up, and it gives them a chance to hit 1,500 and be able to survive and fuck you over. Just because you get there first doesn't mean you win automatically. Again, it's just, I think it was one of the most balanced out games like this that we have played in a long time.
Yeah.
Because no matter what's happening, how well you're doing in the beginning, you can always balance it out at the end and come back and clean it up. I thought it was really good about that. A lot of good weapon balance. I like the longer range weapons just because that's the kind of player I am. But if I picked up a katana or a hammer, I knew I was still going to be able to do some damage with it. And shit, there were games, I won games just straight up punching people the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't expect it.
And there's an achievement for winning a match without using any weapons at all.
Yeah, doing no damage and winning. And
there's
some
cool achievements in the game. I like them.
Yeah, I think if you're going to look at it from an achievement standpoint, if you're one of those people who has a couple of spare controllers laying around, you're going to get the completion of this in a blink of an eye because you can just boost it.
I don't know. There's some tough ones, like killing someone with a hammer who's falling. That seems like a tough one.
Yeah, that would be pretty tough. And the one for getting a kill after you died.
Yeah.
Because I would have thought that that would pop when you use the laser, but I definitely got kills with the laser and didn't get the achievement.
Yeah.
So that
I'm pretty sure you have to, like, lob a grenade or lob a rocket and die and then get the kill.
I think we determined it didn't count if you suicided, too.
Well, no, I didn't jump off the cliff fast enough that we tried that.
Okay. Well, then we should try that again. But
we'll have to work at it.
I think that there's a lot of opportunity. I like that it's cross-platform. I like that you can host a private lobby and have bots or not have bots. We were playing with the bots on easy, though, and they were making shit life. The life was shit hard.
Yeah.
I can't talk.
I don't know how the easy computers are called easy because they were ruthless.
They were winning, too. And we actually lost a couple games to the computers. And then we were teaming up against the computers just to not lose to them.
And we were still losing.
Yeah. The struggle was real. They were definitely not easy. They're full of shit. There's an XP system. I don't really know why. It doesn't unlock
It unlocks like taunts.
Yeah, it's not anything fantastic. It's just there was somebody that I played with online though, who clearly had a lot of time in the game because they kept booing me. I think he was just jelly that I just straight up punched him off the map at one point.
Maybe.
Like the whole game was boo, and he had like all kinds of different taunts, and I was just like, chill out, dude. That's probably a PlayStation player.
Oh, God. Overall, though, $13 on this one. What do you think of it?
The price is a little high. I would have liked to have seen more maps for it. I hope that it gets some post-launch support and maybe more maps to come because it's a lot of fun, so I would definitely give it a try.
No, $13 on Steam, $15 on console. I should have clarified.
Yeah.
My bad.
I don't like when there's a price discrepancy either.
Hey, it happens.
It does. But yeah, I'd like to see, I'd also like to see it hit Game Pass. That way it had just like, if I'm putting a wish list out there.
Yeah.
Because I always think with games like this, the biggest struggle is getting that community. And
crossplay helps big time, as evidenced by the fact that you had online matches.
Yeah, crossplay definitely helps. But, you know, put a little shot in its arm and get it on Game Pass. And even if it's just for a month, you're going to get people more interested in it.
True.
And boost up that player base a little bit.
I give it a try as well. I think it's a lot of fun. If it was $10, this would be a no-brainer.
Right.
$15 is just a little pricey for even $13 on console would have been better. I wish there were more stages. We went through them so quick, and I wish there were more areas to go to. A couple extra weapons would be nice too, but you know, they could always update it with extra stages and extra weapons. It's always possible.
Yeah. I have hopes that there's a post-launch support.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. I guess we'll see.
Yep.
Final game to talk about tonight is called Lost Artifacts Soulstone, developed by Game On Production, published by 8 Floor, released February 12th on Xbox One for $9.99. After the Soulstone is stolen during an auction in the National Museum, Claire and her loyal helpers witness the revival of the Terracotta Army and its Emperor. The Emperor wishes to take over the world by awakening a dragon from the crater of a volcano, but our heroes have other ideas. Cole, tell us about this one.
You know how I did the review for Day D, and I was like, these games aren't exactly known for their, you know, fantastic stories.
Mm-hmm.
I take it back. This one's pretty good. This one impressed me. At least they didn't get the enemy's name wrong. Yeah, and at least it's better than Dr. Awful. So,
yeah.
As you mentioned in the summary, Soul was stolen from an auction, and your hero is Claire, and her group of plucky helpers are out to help her get it back so that they could stop the Terracotta Army. If you play Garden Gnomes, play D&D, you already know the gameplay mechanics here. You have a map with a bunch of different levels. I want to say there were 49. I think it's 49. And then, because I remember looking at this thing and being like, why aren't there 50? I was confused. Why stop there? I guess the story was told. You have the different levels. You pick a level to play with. It gives you another map that's laid out with certain paths. There's obstructions that you're going to want to click on, and you want to collect resources. You need to get food so that your people will keep working for you because they're loyal, but bitches be hungry. You're going to need wood so that you can build buildings. You need stone. Eventually, you're going to need contractors who can, you know, help you produce more. You're going to need people who can, I can't remember the proper name that it uses for the monk that goes in and builds the statues and stuff for you. But you're going to need to be able to scare away the Terracotta Army so that you can clear the path and get through the objectives if you actually want to complete the level. They are timed. There is a bar on the side. There always is with these games. There's a bar on the side. Timer drops as you're playing. Bar goes down, gets past the star, you lose it. So you got to finish the game before the bar depletes. There's a lot of strategy involved in these. And with Gnome's Garden and Day D, it was noticeable that it started this little trend. But the strategy aspect, in Gnome's Garden, there was one way to beat the level, and that was it. And if you wanted the 3-star, you had to do it in an exact order and path, the fastest one to get you there.
Yeah.
And that was it. There was no way to bypass anything. D&D had a couple of levels that had the ability to come up with more than one solution. But almost every level in Lost Artifacts has that ability.
That's good.
There's different paths. There's different ways to take it on. Some are going to be faster. Some are going to be slower, depending on the order that you build things. So it's nice to see that these are getting more fleshed out as we go along, because they were really rough in the beginning. The character models are still a little kind of janky. They're 3D characters in a 2D level, basically, and not the prettiest thing you're ever going to look at. I do think that this one is definitely one of the prettier ones. The cutscenes are static images, but the art style for them is really well done. That's definitely an improvement over Gnome's Garden by and large. D&D was slightly improved, but this one is actually really pretty and well illustrated. With a better story. So I'm glad to see that these are just gradually improving, because I really do enjoy them.
I'm guessing the different development teams help as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like each one takes the good parts from the last one and builds on it, makes it a little better.
That's good.
So it's good to see that. It's good to see that, yeah, it may be, it's like an Artifacts Monday game, in that you know it's Artifacts Monday when you look at it, but there's different teams involved. And so sometimes you get something a little different and it might not be as good, but you still enjoy yourself. They got the same thing going on with 8th Floor here. You know what you're going to get when you see it. You're going to get one of these point and click strategy games. You know that it's going to be genuinely fairly easy. I do think though with this one, the puzzles have advanced quite a bit, and that might be because of the aspect of being able to choose different paths, that you're going to have to replay them a couple of times to really find the fastest route. But overall, it's a good little game. I'm not mad at these at all, and I really do enjoy them. If you want something a little more heart pumping, but still relaxing, this is what you're going to want to click up. Like, this is the in-between between Glass Masquerade and Apex Legends.
You're that, like, is such a weird place to set a game in between.
Like, it's relaxing, but it still has some challenge to it.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. So, $10 on this. What do you think?
I give it a buy it. These are getting better, and I look for it. I hope they bring more. They are getting better with everyone.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yay!
Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through the news. We made it through the reviews. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about, or are you good?
No, we failed miserably at speedrunning, though.
We did. Two hours. Oh, well. What are you going to do?
I'm going to go play Glass Masquerade.
Well, then, do you have any final words?
Nope. Not this week. I'm too damn tired.
Then good night, everyone.